My name is Michael Rodriguez. I'm the coordinator for humanities collections at MSU Libraries, and I'm also the librarian for English and American Literature, among several other things. I first want to thank Childress Books for coming, and they have books for sale in the back of the room. I think Lev is happy to sign them after the reading, correct? Yes.
I'll sign any book, actually, even other people's books.
So it takes stuff off the shelves, and he'll sign it.
I didn't write this, but it's pretty good.
Right.
Lev Rafael.
Lev Rafael is the author of the novel Rosedale in Love and 20 other books in genres from mystery to memoir. Rafael is best known as a pioneer in writing fiction and creative nonfiction about the children of Holocaust survivors, which he's been publishing since 1978. His books have been translated into a dozen languages, and he's done hundreds of invited talks and readings on three continents. His work has appeared in dozens of anthologies in the U.S. and England, and he has taught at universities around the country and has been analyzed in scholarly articles and books and at conferences like the MLA, the Modern Language Association. A former radio talk show host on WLNZ, he blogs for the Huffington Post and reviews books for WKAR 90.5 FM in East Lansing and bibliobuffet.com. His papers have been collected by the MSU libraries, and I understand are very close to being usable in special collections, yes. And Rafael's website is www.levrafael.com. Follow him on Twitter at LevRafael, at LevRafael, right? Okay. So please welcome Lev Rafael.
It's really good to be here at MSU, especially since MSU is collecting my literary papers, which means that everything I've ever written, every draft I've ever done for the last 30 years is going to be accessible to students of literature forever, barring nuclear attack. Is it nuclear sheltered against that? And so what exactly does that mean? If a grad student, for instance, wants to take a look at my very first published short story that won a prestigious prize and appeared in a major national magazine, they could find the journal in which I made the notes for the story. They could find handwritten drafts. They could see it as it was published. They could see the correspondence that I had with editors about it, with professors. They could follow that story from idea in a journal all the way to publication and beyond, and they could see how it changed over time. And that's, as someone who's done literary research, that's very valuable, though, especially now that a lot of us just don't save our drafts on the computer. You know, when we're typing, we just go over stuff and we don't print drafts out. That kind of material is invaluable. And so it's very cool to be collected. It also makes you think you must be really old, and because most people, I always think of collections, you know, going to libraries after people die. But I guess not. When I told writer friends of mine that my work was being collected at MSU, I was usually greeted with silence, and I discovered that of the dozens, probably hundreds of writers I know, nobody else had their papers purchased by a library in the U.S. In fact, one person told me that she had been trying to sell her papers. That didn't work. And then she started offering to give them away. And she said she could not find a library that was interested in her work. So I don't know if she wanted me to put in a good word with MSU or not, but it's really an honor for that to happen. And it's nice to be brought down to earth, because when this happened, I told my eldest that, you know, my papers have been purchased. They'll always be there, available in the archives at MSU. This is really amazing. Now I'm part of history. And he said, no, you've always been part of history. The only difference is now you'll have an index. That's what we need our kids for, to keep us humble. I want to read the opening of my memoir, My Germany, because it's a book that I never expected to write. People ask, where do ideas come from when you're a writer? And basically, they come everywhere. In fact, sometimes I feel like my head is Chicago's O'Hare Airport and the planes are circling. That's how many ideas I have. And since I'm a very slow typist, I could probably, I have 22 books out, I could probably have another 10 out if I actually typed faster. I'm really, really slow. But this isn't a book that I never imagined writing because it's about Germany. And I grew up hating Germany and never thought I would be there, never thought I would want to go back, and never thought I would write anything about it. So it's a really very much a surprise. I've had books that people have asked me to write, have been commissioned for me by editors. I've had books that, you know, I do a mystery series, the Nick Hoffman mystery series set at the State University of Michigan, SUM, in the town of Michiganapolis. Look it up. It might strike you as a little familiar. And so, you know, I was commissioned to do those. This is a book that I never thought that I would write. And the idea for it came to me on a train. And so I will read you the opening of the book, set on a train, starting on a train, to give you a sense of what the book is about and what it's like. And then I'd be happy to take any and all questions about the book, about writing. It looks like there's some writing students or English students here. So anything about writing. I did not require my students, my own personal students, to come. I thought I would save that for something else. You know, I don't know what, but I'm on a train heading into Magdeburg in eastern Germany, about 2 hours southwest of Berlin. 61 years ago, my late mother was on a very different sort of train, also headed for Magdeburg. Her train did not have a dining car. Her train did not have changing electronic displays updating the train's speed and distance from its next station. Her train did not have toilets. She was one of 300 Jewish women internees being transported from the brutal concentration camp of Stutthof on the Baltic coast, 21 miles from Danzig, in sealed and stinking cattle cars. In Magdeburg, my mother would be a slave laborer for over a year at Poltefabrik, Germany's largest munitions plant. Her factory was the scene of many accidents. And every night that she was there, my mother would dream that her fingers were being cut off. These dreams haunted her for years after her liberation by the American Army in 1945. Those dreams haunt me now on this train as I look down at my own hands. I've come to Magdeburg to do a very different kind of work. I'm on a hectic 2-week book tour, scheduled to speak about and read from my novel, The German Money. It's the story of a Holocaust survivor's adult children who are arguing about their mother's will. The title, The German Money, refers to German reparations paid to the survivor in the novel. Now, not all Holocaust survivors did so, but my parents applied for reparations from the German government. And because they were never financially well off, the monthly checks they got from Germany made a difference in their lives. Did they resent that? They never said. Though my mother detested the word for reparations itself, Wiedergutmachung. How, she said, how could you make things good again? Me, I found it puzzling and even embarrassing that my parents took any money from Germany at all, given how they felt. And when those checks came each month, I would stare at the envelopes with repulsion and fascination. As my train nears the station in Magdeburg, it hits me that my entrance to this city could not be any more American. Think about it. My mother was a slave. She was considered subhuman by the very people whose language she spoke so perfectly, it probably saved her life. She survived. She immigrated to the United States. She gave birth to me in the world's freest country. And now, here I am, returning to the scene of her brutal imprisonment as a successful American author who has two more books after this one scheduled to be published in Germany. And I'm not just any American author. I'm a pioneer in writing about the children of Holocaust survivors, and I've been publishing about this theme longer than anyone else in the U.S. My mother was brought to Magdeburg against her will, but I have made the choice to come. The choice to come to Germany, the country I had sworn I would never visit. When I grew up, I thought of Germany as not just a graveyard, but as a giant thieves' warehouse. I had read in Holocaust histories of the massive European-wide plunder of the Jewish people as they were enslaved and slaughtered. The Nazis didn't merely confiscate shops, businesses, factories, apartments, and homes, gold, jewels, money, and art. They also snatched up pianos, furniture, silverware, fur coats, candelabras, household goods, mattresses, clothing, combs. Combs. Whatever they could, wherever it lay. And I was haunted by the possibility that if I went to Germany, I might be sitting somewhere opposite something that had been stolen from a relative of mine, and I wouldn't know it. The thought horrified me. Germany was likewise the country whose products I could never buy, the country that was so alien, so radioactive, that when I was a child, I used to imagine maps of Europe without a Germany, as if I were a superhero whose laser gaze could just slice it away from the continent, and it would sink without a trace. No more Germany, no more Germans. And I would have revenge for the camps and the killing squads that not only murdered dozens of my parents' relatives, but also poisoned their memories. Talking about their lost parents, cousins, aunts, and uncles was so painful for my own parents that now, in middle age, I don't have a family tree that I can climb. I don't know names and professions and cities to study and explore. Yet, here I am, in Germany, in Magdeburg, going over an introduction that a German-speaking friend has helped me to write. I decided that it would be polite to break the ice with my audiences by speaking a bit of German, and I've been enjoying people's reactions as the tour progresses. They are completely surprised that an American would even attempt to speak German, a language which has 16 ways to say the word the. They're also surprised that my accent's not so bad. I'm not. I have come to Germany in strength, not weakness. I may feel anxious, but I feel prepared. The bookstore is affiliated with the Protestant cathedral a block away, and it's packed before I begin. There are at least 45 people sitting there looking interested and attentive. It's very warm inside, and at times I feel compelled to do a better reading than I have ever done before in my entire career, because not so far away from where I am standing, my mother was an utterly expendable cog in the German war machine. My book, My writing is a challenge to that. People, insight, literature, all these things count. When I'm done, the questions come slowly. And while I understand some of the German, at times a fog of incomprehension sweeps over me and I have to wait for the translation. Is this German fatigue? Too much time immersed in a language not my own? Or is it something else that's making me feel dizzy? The audience wants to know a great deal. The audience wants to know everything. How long did the book take to write? How much of it is autobiographical? Can I say more about my mother's experiences in Magdeburg? How about my father? How did my parents meet? How much did they talk about the war years? And then, after about half an hour, from the front row comes a very quiet question. A man asks me, "Do you think forgiveness is possible?" Well, I start with my mother, who told me that, in fact, she never blamed all Germans for what happened, and that younger Germans surely had nothing to do with events taking place before their birth. The man says, "That was her. That's only part of the story. What do you think?" "Forgiveness," I ask. "Of course it's possible. If not, I wouldn't be here. And I think I mean those words as I say them. But the idea of forgiveness has never occurred to me before. I am not in Germany to forgive anyone. I am in Germany to explore what has always been taboo and terrifying for me. I am in Germany to face my demons." When the long evening ends with applause and some announcements, the effusive bookstore owner, who does not speak a word of English, gives me a picture book about Magdeburg and bottles of local liqueur. Exhausted and humbled, the only thing I can think of at that moment is the ending of William Faulkner's novel Light in August. My, 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 a body does get around. So I'd be happy to take any questions about this particular book, memoir in general, creative writing, anything. Yes, Whitney.
I'm just curious, the collection, did you keep hard copy drafts of your work? I personally was sort of the first computer generation of when I write, like you said, I would just write over it. Once in a while I would have a half-finished draft.
I do endless revision. Even though I publish a lot, everything I publish is revised over and over. So what I would do is do a draft, print it off, do the revisions by hand, enter them, print that off, do the revisions by hand. I mean, occasionally there may be a half a draft missing, but I just printed everything off because even now, a computer screen doesn't give me, even if I have facing pages, I still don't have a good sense of the flow of a piece until I could lay things out. That's just probably from where, given when I started writing, but I printed out a lot of stuff and I always kept it. And it seemed important to me, especially since I knew that sometimes a later revision would not be as good as an earlier version. So I think, well, where's that first or second or third version? And I'd go back to that. So that's why I kept everything. But there's also plenty of handwritten stuff, too. There's even a handwritten novel, which I never typed up. So everything is here. Isn't it? Everything, yeah. Other questions? Yes, Michael.
Is it your impression that Germans seek forgiveness?
The question is, do Germans seek forgiveness? I think some do. I think The way they go about it is by education, working. I have a friend who works in not just in Holocaust education, but also works to fight indoctrination by young kids by the far right, by the Nazi part, the quasi Nazi party in Germany. So I think people are doing a lot of things that, in effect, are about forgiveness, but I think they think of it more as memorialization. We can't forget what happened on our soil. Must be remembered, and that's why it cracks me up. I've been in Germany now 5 times, and every time I go, someone says, "Well, the Germans haven't really, apologized, recognized what they've done." And I said, "You can't go anywhere in Germany without running into a memorial about the Holocaust. I mean, they are obsessed with it. And when you're over there and you read the newspapers, something comes out about the Holocaust every single day in every newspaper." So they have not forgotten, and a lot of the people I met are working really hard. I think why they like not being there is because we can meet across a gap. It's not about forgiveness; it's more about reconciliation, about making a connection. You know, I can't forgive anyone for what they did to my parents. My parents would have to do that. I don't have that power, but I can, reach across. And I've met many people who are children or grandchildren of Nazis. I mean, and they know it. I mean, they say it. You know, I had dinner last time in November. I had dinner with someone who said, "Oh yeah, my grandma was dyed-in-the-wool Nazi from the very beginning, and even after the war, she was a Nazi. She said Hitler was right, and we just played our cards wrong." So, Germany is the only place where I've ever felt lucky to have parents who went through the Holocaust, because I thought, talking to people who are suffering with this kind of knowledge in their family, I think I am happy that my parents were victims as opposed to perpetrators, because I don't have to stay awake at night wondering what my parents did, but they do, and that's very hard for them. Other questions? Yes?
What is the genesis?
Yeah, translated in German. Yeah, no, they were translated in German. No, I couldn't write in German. I can only do emails in German, but that's actually not so bad. I haven't tweeted in German yet. I should. I should start it. But once I realized I was going, I thought, as I said in the prologue, I thought, you can't just walk into a reading with German people in a museum or a library or a synagogue and just start speaking in English. You've got to reach out to the audience. You can't assume everyone speaks English fluently. So that was something that I wanted to do, and it was an interesting challenge. So I started taking courses. I've taken probably a handful of courses at LCC and at MSU. Just basic German, starting with basic German, and I have a fairly good ear, so I picked it up. They tend to think I'm Norwegian. They can't place me exactly. They think I can't be American, so they ask if I'm from Norway. I don't know. Maybe that's the default question. So that's what I've done. I'm not studying it now because I'm not going over there. And the last 2 times I was there, I had a tutor at home. And we would meet every week, and I actually did readings in German. I did my introductions in German, and I read the book from the German translation. And that was a challenge. That was really hard, because it's completely different, and I never done it. But I'm really glad that I did, because it's an experience that's kind of eerie to be hearing your own words, but they're not yours, but they are. In another language, and to learn to put them across was a lot of fun. I don't think I have the energy to try another language. I do know French, but my work hasn't been translated into French. Anyone else? Yes?
A little bit more about where you ended, about the
I'm sorry? In what sense?
I'm just curious why
Well, because I was astonished that I was in Germany to begin with. I mean, for me, growing up, I used to dream of going to Europe, but I think I don't want to fly over Germany. I don't want to take a train through Germany. My worst fear was that something would happen and I'd be stuck in a German hospital surrounded by them, okay? So given all that, for me to be in Germany doing a reading, doing what I love, because I love to do readings and I've done hundreds of them, doing that, sharing my work with a German audience just seemed astonishing. I was just there in November for 2 weeks, and it seems bizarre to me that I was actually there. The last 2 times, the State Department sponsored my tour. So, for me, that quote just popped into my head in terms of how astonishing my journey was. And that's why I had to write it. And, I'm a magpie with quotes, and things occur to me at very different times. And so the book explores what it was like to grow up, fearing and loathing Germany, how that shaped my identity, and then actually what happened when I went there, which was not what I expected. Yeah, Peter.
Do you have any sense of who the people were who came to your readings in Germany? Why they came?
Total cross-section. College students, graduate students, grandmothers and grandfathers, probably not neo-Nazis. I would assume that they would self-select. They would not come. Nobody ever tried to disrupt a reading or talk. Mostly not Jewish, even though there are 100,000 Jews living in Germany now. Mostly Germans who were interested in the subject. But it's also, Germany is a very different country than America. It's a really rich book culture. I mean, you see ads for books everywhere you go. Not, thrillers necessarily or only, but novels. I mean, you see them everywhere. They read in a way that we don't. So they look at artists very differently. The writers, they actually think of us as artists. And a couple of times I'd ask people, it was very quiet. Did it go well? She said, well, some people are afraid to ask an artist a question because it might be stupid or disrespectful. So that's something that is very different from here because, people in America will ask, what kind of underwear do you have? And, aren't afraid to ask anything. And so the culture is different. And I think lots of people came who were interested in literature. People who read, people would come and give me books. I mean, it was... going to readings is a big deal there. I mean, they sell tickets. I mean, so to me that people would spend, 10 euros on a ticket and then buy a book afterwards was kind of amazing. And the books are very expensive there. One of my books was close to 30 euros there, and I was amazed because that's closer to $40, people would just buy one or two, It's very different from how people perceive writers here. I think here we're kind of replaceable, but there writers are not. They're as important as musicians or choreographers or anyone else, and that feels great. I mean, and they love artists so much that they give you stuff. 2 tours ago, I felt like I was a homeless person with all my life in a shopping cart because they kept giving me so much stuff and I didn't have enough luggage for it. So I must look really bizarre getting on trains. They give me books and CDs and calendars and bottles of wine and just stuff. I had to stop twice and send things home. I thought, well, I can't drink 5 bottles of wine, by myself. So I thought, well, I'll give it to my next host. Little did I know that if you come to a city and you give your host a bottle of wine, they feel doubly obligated to give you something wonderful in return. So that didn't get rid of the wine. I would get even more wine. You know, it was the only way I got out of it was I had a carry-on, and I at the very end of the tour I said I can't take these bottles on with me. And so someone is in Frankfurt is saving a bottle of wine to have with me the next time I'm there. She said, you should come when the weather's nicer. So it's just a total cross-section of people. I could not predict ever. Sometimes it was also people who were interested in perfecting their English, and that was great too. So there was no way of knowing. But people really opened up. People really shared a lot of themselves at the readings. You know, so that surprised me too. Anyone else? Well, thank you for coming and have a good night.